Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today. You can follow me on Twitter, at Glink. I've just tweeted out a picture of me and Steinberg, just because that was cool, and why not? Or thinklink.com, bestmoneymoves.com. But I want to dive right in. We've got Andrea Haines with us. She is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation and the editorial director of Red Eye. Andrea, it's so nice to see you again. Hey, let me turn on your mic so everybody can hear you say that. There we go.
Great to see you, Elise.
So lots of news coming on. Mark Zuckerberg is finally bringing his tour of the U.S. to Chicago.
He is. So Mark is, or Zuck, as we all affectionately call him, is trying to visit every state in the union this year. And he's finally heading to Chicago. So he'll be here June 22nd and 23rd meeting with leaders of Facebook groups, and yeah, it's kind of exciting to have the Zuck coming to town.
Yeah, and the entourage that I'm sure follows him everywhere he goes. One of the things that I heard last week is that Facebook has actually recently leased another couple of floors in their office building, and they're going to be expanding their workforce here. Have you been hearing that?
Interesting. Yeah, I don't know that I've seen that.
So that's what I've heard. We'll see if that's actually true. But
yeah.
It's always good when tech companies sort of expand in Chicago. And we've been seeing that, particularly in the West Loop, with the buildings that are going up.
Absolutely.
And the companies
it's
going in there.
Gangbusters out there, yep.
What else is going on in your world?
So a company we wrote about this week that's interesting is called Sparkle, which this time of year when we want clean cars and the trees are making us not have clean cars, I found interesting.
It's only the trees.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, that's a big part of it.
Right.
So Sparkle is a Chicago-based company that offers car cleaning, but the booking is completely by app, so you can pay kind of friction-free on the app, and they will actually come to you wherever you are, and they use a waterless method. So theoretically, they can clean pretty much anywhere.
That's nice, and green as well, because
yes,
you're using
so
less water.
Yes, so it uses a lot less water.
That's kind of cool.
They use kind of a chemical compound that is natural and doesn't require all those gallons of water.
All right, so Sparkle is S-P-A-R-K-L. It reminds me of the Sparkle cleaner that you used to, it was purple, not blue, like Windex.
Yeah.
I don't know, same kind of spelling. Anyway, you can go, do you have any idea? Oh, it's $32?
So it's $32 if you get both an interior and exterior cleaning, or $25 a piece. So better deal, I guess, to have both done at the same time.
God, everything, you can get anything. We're becoming like New York. Anything from anywhere at any hour of the day or night.
I know. And these kind of companies, I always wonder, like, in a way, it doesn't seem super unique. But on the other hand, somebody's got to do this, right? This will be brought to this internet app sale system. We'll all be doing this one day, and somebody's got to own it. So This is a women-owned company that's operating out of 1871 and their Wisdom program.
Yeah, I love that.
See how they do. Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck to them. And then you said that Chicago, there's a story about how Chicago has landed on the top 10 of a new list of promising tech cities. I would have thought we'd already been there.
Yeah, no. And actually, they missed the top 10. They didn't make the top 10 on this one. There's a new study every other day, it seems like, and we have a love-hate relationship with following those because they all are looking at something slightly different and the numbers all get a little crazy. But this one is by Cushman & Wakefield, and they're looking at the ability of these sort of tech companies to impact the commercial real estate world. So that's the kind of lens that they're looking through. But they did a pretty thorough study, and Chicago came in 16th, which isn't exactly setting the world on fire at that number.
I don't know. It could be 50.
True.
Like, you know, the state falls to the bottom of other lists. So we're not 50.
I guess
48.
If we set the bar at where does Illinois usually rank, then you could argue this is good. This could be good.
Well, you know, from Cushman & Wakefield's perspective, I mean, they're a commercial leasing company. And so they're looking at the amount of space that's available and who's actually renting it. And to the point about Facebook, it's companies that are doing it. I'm reading more stories about the existing tech companies expanding, and we're seeing new tech companies emerge. I have a tech company, but we're based in Glencoe, Illinois. So, you know, not a lot of available commercial space there.
Yeah. And they did look at some other kind of interesting things, from amount of venture capital funding to the number of workers in the city that are in sort of knowledge based type jobs, which include computers, math, engineering, things like that. It led to some pretty interesting results, and it pointed out some areas where Chicago maybe isn't ranking as high, including, you know, just some of the employment measures against other cities.
Right. Well, Andrea, thank you so much for all of that. Where can we find more?
BlueSkyInnovation.com.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Andrea Haines, editor of Blue Sky Innovation and editorial director of Red Eye. Thanks for dropping by. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Elise. You too.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand, and I've got in the studio with me now the next victim, Tom Gimbel, live from the studio here. So Tom is with CEO of LaSalle Network. I understand that summer is not the worst time in the world to look for a job because we've got a lot of college grads coming out now.
I think even for experienced hires, there's such a stereotype that executives and management are vacationing during the summer, that it's a slower time. It's middle of the year from a budget standpoint, and people aren't hiring. They do it in the beginning of the year. I think those stereotypes are not true. I believe that if they are, it's even better time to strike because everybody else thinks they're not doing anything. So your competition is less in the marketplace, and it's really a good time to make connections and to make moves.
Sometimes people or companies start their years July 1st mm-hmm. or August 1st. So when you think about beginning of the year, this might be the beginning of many fiscal years.
Yeah, if you're not on a calendar year and you're on a July 1 fiscal, there's absolutely no doubt about that.
I was surprised when I read in the paper the other day that 8 out of 10 college graduates graduating right now are graduating without jobs. And I'm thinking about how their 6 months of student loan, you know, they get to put it on hold for 6 months, but that's going to run out pretty quickly. How do kids today find jobs?
Well, I like to think that a lot of them use firms like mine, mm-hmm. right? But there's a lot of networking going on. I think with the use of social media, you have a lot more college students that are getting on LinkedIn as soon as they get an internship. So you're getting that population going a lot more. And the career services departments at universities are amped up in a lot bigger and more broader scope than they've ever been before. So we're seeing a lot of that. And really, the internship, aside from being a resume builder, we're seeing a lot more internships, companies using those and then converting those people over, either if it's after senior year or junior year, and bringing them in full time the following.
How is your business changing now that the workforce is so tight and we're seeing this unemployment rate of just over 4%? Versus when maybe 4 or 5 years ago when we had 8 or 9% unemployment.
Yeah, it really is a different mix. We see a lot more with the stock market continuing to rise and the economy continuing to be good and unemployment low. It's really becoming more of an employee market. So if you're stable, if your background is stable and you've been at a company with a list of accomplishments, you can go where you want to go. Now, what we're seeing now with low unemployment is that if you're a serial job hopper, it's not at the point it was in, call it 04, mm-hmm. when things were great. People aren't going to pay you just because you've had X amount of experience. They want stability. They want people who have really proven track records.
Well, I know when I'm looking at resumes, if I've seen somebody who switches jobs every 12 months to 18 months, mm-hmm. I'm not interested. Because you go through so much to find a good person and who's a good fit for your culture, and I think swapping people in and out is not great.
Well, that's really the thing, right? So over the past half dozen years, when culture's become the buzzword, and to bring somebody in who leaves even if they leave every 2 years, right?
Right.
You're sitting there. Now, there's certain departments, right, inside sales groups and things like that, mm-hmm. where you expect a higher turnover rate.
Sure.
But at a management level or an executive level, to bring somebody in who leaves every 2 years, and what you're seeing is there's a reason why that is.
Right. And you want to keep it fresh for those people, I assume, but, you know, for sure. But, you know, I spoke to a woman this morning who's been, she's now at a very, very, very senior level, but she's been with the same company for 30 years. But inside that company,
she's moved around.
She has moved around.
And that there's so many different departments, especially if you're talking about a Fortune 1000 company, right?
Sure.
There's so many different areas, so many different projects. What you want to look for and what people should be trying to do to their resumes is showing upward mobility, obviously, which is old school, but also showing that things were lateral transfers, special projects taken on. And it amazes me, at least till to this day, how few people still put tangible accomplishments on their resume.
Right.
Right? It's very much passive.
Right. People don't learn. They have to learn how to really be active voice. Is what we used to say in the journalism business, you know, right?
Well, people will say, well, I wasn't in sales, so what numbers do I have? Well, even if you're an executive assistant for a high-flying chairman or CEO or whatever, right? What did you do for his or her schedule? How did you reduce travel costs? What were you? There's certain percentages you can put on even just saying 24/7 or accessibility on weekends. But these bullet points that show what you've accomplished and in other ways, you have to be able to show that one of two things. You made the company money or you saved the company money.
Sure.
In every job.
How do you bring value to that job and how do you express that value to somebody else who's not inside and doesn't know what's going on?
And if you can't directly say what your manager at your last company or present company will say about you mm-hmm. directly. Answer the question, right? There's something a little bit fishy.
That's a really good point. So when you're counseling people, and I know that you help counsel people on how to interview, how do you get them to a place where they can either acknowledge what they've done or gloss over maybe something they want to miss?
Well, there's a sense of accountability. It's almost like, you know, I have three kids, and when something goes wrong, I always go, own it.
Right.
Own the situation. You broke it, start off with, I broke it. Don't make me fish around for 20 minutes to find it out. And the same thing in an interview. If you got fired, say, I got fired, and let me tell you why. Right?
And, oh my gosh, that would make me it makes me nervous just hearing you say that.
But the first thing you hear when somebody says that, when someone goes, did you get fired or were you downsized or quit? Oh no, I was fired, and let me explain to you why.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And all of a sudden, you believe their side of the story.
Right.
When somebody beats around, you walk away, you go, I think they were fired. Now they're wishy-washy. Now you either say, I like them or I don't, but there is no gray.
What is, and we're just have a minute left, but what is the number one mistake you're seeing people make over and over again? We've talked about active voice. We've talked about not stating your accomplishments, but what else do you see out there on resumes that drives you crazy?
I really believe the number one thing is what we touched on. It's lack of stability. People don't, you know, I say this all the time in any speech I ever do, at least I always go, when you have kids or when you were a kid, you say, oh, you got to play for this bad coach or this bad teacher will make you a better worker because you'll have a bad boss. And then you get to be the point where you have a bad boss and you quit. Right? Or you tell your kid to quit, or your husband to quit, or your wife to quit. No, suck it up and stick through it and stay at a place for 4 years. Get to that. You need 4 years plus somewhere.
Right? To really understand so that people can see that you have stability.
And learn, take some ownership. It might be a bad boss, but there's something you can do to make the relationship better. It takes two to tango.
Do you like the college grads who are coming out now?
I do. I think we can blame technology all we want, but it's never the kids' fault. It's always the parents.
All right. Well, we're going to get into spanking parents later in the show, so you'll have to come
back. Let me know if you want me back on that one.
I will. Sounds like you've got some experience in that. Tom Gimbel, thank you so much for being with us.
Always good to be with you.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink. So glad you could join us today. Perry Yateman is the founder and CEO of a company called Your Career, Your Terms. She also hosts a podcast by the same name. She does some work with Kellogg, and I have known her now for a year, and it's just been delightful. I'm so glad you could join us on the show today, Perry. So I wanted to talk to you today. I know that you have spent a really amazing career doing everything from living in, is it more than 50 countries, right? Something like crazy number like that, to helping some of the biggest companies in this country with communication issues and strategies. You do it for nonprofits, you do it for for-profits. Right now you're working with Kellogg on some very interesting things. Let's talk a little bit about women in the workforce and how women are perceived as they move through their careers. There seems to be places where women just kind of step back, step down, or step out. And I know that you've worked very hard at trying to find ways around that and keep women in the workforce with some of the work you're doing. Tell me a little bit about that work and where you see some of these issues.
Yeah, thank you. So first, let me clarify, I have worked in about 50 or more than 50 countries. I haven't lived in all of them. I've lived in about four, but I've worked in more than 50. And yes, this is a real passion of mine, despite the progress. I mean, just this week, we saw the new Fortune 500 list. It had more women on it than ever. But still, women are just a really small number at the top. We are getting them in the pipeline. That's the way I think of it. So we are now about 50-50 in most educational programs. We're graduating women. They are entering the entering classes on, and most companies are almost 50-50. But when you look at the top, we have just lost a lot of women along the way. And so the question is, why? And what can we do about it? Because I think we all are beginning to understand that this really matters for society, and it really matters for business and organizational performance. And so I've been studying this. I've been working a lot, as you said, with the Kellogg School of Management. And what we've really seen is there are kind of three key, what we call pivot points in a woman's career, where if we can help her along the way, she is more likely to stay in and therefore more likely to get to the top. And if we fail, then she's definitely going to be stepping out, as you said, stepping back, et cetera. And if you want me, I'll just talk a little bit about each of those three pivot point.
Well, let's start with the first one, because we know that launch, when people, you call this the launch phase, when somebody is just getting into their career, whether it's right after college or maybe they've taken a break and gone back to graduate school and now they're coming back into it. Where do women fall out in after the launch phase?
Well, the truth is they fall out before they even begin. I mean, Sheryl Sandberg pointed this out in Lean In, but we see it repeatedly, which is that women don't start by going for the biggest, baddest jobs they can. They set their expectations low. They don't take risks. And because of that, they start out right from the beginning at a deficit. So that's what we mean by launching well. So launching well is about going for growth. It's about getting truly the biggest, baddest, boldest job you can and learning as much as possible as fast as you can so that you have more choices, more options down the road when you may want to do slightly different things. So it's you kind of hard charge out of the gate, if you look at it that way.
All right. So you're dreaming big right at the beginning. And then what happens in sort of the mid-career? And I know that mid-career, when you describe it, it's more than just, say, the middle point of a life, like age 40 or age 50. It could be anywhere from, I imagine, you know, early 30s or even late 20s when you start having kids, all the way to where? How do you describe that?
You're absolutely right, Elise. But we call it the mid-career marathon. And for most women, they describe it as the hardest and longest period of their career, because it goes all the way from kind of as soon as you take on a partner and then you add kids. And then for many of us, actually looking at aging parents on the other end, you know, the truth is in America, women carry a significantly greater burden of the home work, work at home, caregiving work. And so we all, it may be equal in the workforce, so we're each working, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week at the office, but when men get done, they're pretty much done. And when women, quote unquote, get done, they begin their second job at home. And so one of the things that's really important about this phase is that we all need to work together. You know, women need to work with their partners. Government needs to support women in terms of, and if you look at other countries, they have very different data on this, because they provide, you know, affordable child care. They provide, you know, all these kinds of other things. So what it really is about support and prioritization. And then the last thing I'd say for us women particularly is give up on perfect and really give up on guilt.
I don't know if that's possible, Perry, to give up on perfection and guilt at the same time.
Doesn't one drive the other? You feel guilty because you're not perfect. But yes, I agree with you. This is a big ask. But if we could just make a bit of progress in it, we would all feel so much better. Because a lot of what happens, I mean, there's a great Harvard study that says working, you know, kids of working moms do better. They thrive, male or female. So we don't have to feel guilty about working, right? The only people who feel guilty are, you know, the only people who are really being impacted is us. So give it up.
All right. So you've got this kind of middle stretch where you have kids and you may step out, you may step back in, you may figure out some way to keep going. And then you get to the, if you last, if you stay in, you get into management and upper level management, maybe even the executive C-suite. But yet, when you look at corporate boards of, say, the Fortune 1000, it's under, what, 5% are headed up by women right now? I know for sure it's under 10%.
Yep. Yep, it's a damn small number. Let's go with that. And okay. What I'll tell you about that, what I would say about that is a couple things. One, as women move up, I think for a long time we've actually been incenting them just like men, which really is not the way to go in all cases. So with a lot of our male peers, they are looking for, you know, more recognition, more reward, more money, more power, more status. And the truth is, as women, once we've kind of met our basic needs for remuneration and recognition, et cetera, we're actually, a lot of us, more motivated by purpose or meaning. So we need to reframe what we're offering when we offer these big jobs to women, because sometimes it's because women don't get offered, but sometimes it's because it gets offered and women decline. They choose to step out. When it comes to boards, and I was just having a great conversation about this yesterday with somebody who recruits for boards, the thing is, we need to actually form an old girls club, right? Just as the men have often gotten on boards because they know other men who serve on boards, et cetera. And so much of the board game, if you will, is about being known, being trusted, being recognized. And men help men routinely in this space. But women have not historically, first of all, we have fewer places, but secondarily, we are not necessarily all proactively seeking to put other capable women on the slate every time there's an opening. And we need to start doing that for each other. We need to make sure we know who's capable. And I'm not talking about gender diversity for the sake of numbers. I'm talking about getting just the best blend of skills and experience and diverse perspectives on a board. And so I say we really need to cultivate and embrace this kind of, if it's the old boys network, let's call it the old girls network. Not as appealing for us girls, but still. The old girls network, where we really begin to support each other and grow those numbers to at least the, I'm a fan of the 30% club. So I'm going for 30%.
All right. 30% sounds good. Now, Perry, you interview on your podcast, Your Career, Your Terms. It's a website. It's a podcast. And you interview some of the most amazing high-profile CEOs and CFOs and CMOs and CCOs in the country who are women. And you help them tell their stories. And this is, and I know you write for Fortune and HuffPost. So what I'm going to just say is, everybody out there, I will post some links on my Facebook page, my Elise Kling Facebook page, and we'll put it up here on the WGN page as well, to Perry and her podcast, so you can get more information. But I really think your podcast is a must listen. And it's been great to have you on the show today.
Elise, thanks so much. It was my pleasure.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 12:52 on WGN Radio. I'm Elise Klink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand. He'll be back on Monday. You can follow me on Twitter at Glink. I've been posting some pictures of our guests today, and also at thinkglink.com. All right, let's talk about NeoCon. We've got a great show that starts here on Monday. Sean Green is Vice President of Design and Product Marketing at Kruger International, and he joins me on the phone. Sean, welcome.
Hey, Elise, how are you today?
I'm fine, thank you. So 50,000 people from across the design and architecture communities are coming this week for, I didn't even realize, it was North America's largest design expo, NeoCon. I used to cover that when I was at WGN-TV, and we would go and look at some of the latest trends for sort of offices and people who were living in, you know, their houses but wanted to furnish home offices. What do you think we're going to see this year?
I think you'll see a pretty diverse cross-section of not only office furniture designs and concepts, but also applications for education, healthcare, and other markets that are out there. So the show has really expanded over the years. I think primary focus for the show, at least initially, was really those corporate environments, and then we had that sort of residential influence for a while. But I think you'll see more and more solutions that are much broader based for healthcare as well as education being presented this year.
Well, it's kind of interesting. If you go around to some very modern hospitals and also modern schools or colleges, to your point, you are seeing a residential influence being brought into the commercial spaces. So you might actually, we hear a lot of talk about safe spaces at colleges, but a lot of that is very home-like, the way that they've created it. So could you talk a little bit about that philosophy of humanizing office spaces or healthcare spaces or educational spaces and what you're seeing out there?
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned the word human. It really is a human-centered approach to design and environments. I think we're finally understanding, at least on a holistic basis, that it's not about the products and the applications. It's really about distilling things down from a behavioral standpoint to say, no matter what environment you're in, education or healthcare or corporate settings, there's really four primary behaviors. People need a place to focus, interact, places to create, as well as places to relax. And we're seeing that more so now than ever in healthcare spaces, education spaces, and eventually into the corporate settings. So it's really not about sort of the task-specific functional attributes. For example, if I'm an accountant, I have to have a specific type of workstation, or I'm a marketing person. We're really seeing much more of an emphasis on human interaction, relations, bringing in the elements from home, so hence that residential design, but it's more than just textiles and finishes and so forth. It's about creating these playing scenarios that allow for, from a behavioral basis, the ability to interact, to be able to share, to relax, and ultimately focus on the task that needs to be done. So I see that now, and we see that really happening heavily in the education market. And we call it campus to corporate. The things that we know and understand in the education market, being a leader, a thought leader within that market, We see a lot of the elements of interaction, ideation, et cetera, transcending and really conveying themselves within the corporate settings as well as healthcare.
It's so interesting. And we just have a minute to go, but I'm thinking of offices that I have been in where you've got tables that now can be written on and then it automatically goes to a big screen that everybody can see. There's just an innovation that's going on in all of these different areas that I think technology is kind of building in and giving us the ability to do more with the workspaces and tabletops and things that we have. Are you seeing that as well?
Absolutely. Technology has freed us from the shackles of being tied to the desk, from being processed to the migration of being creative workers. And we're seeing that creative students, creative healing, it really is about creativity, and innately people are creative, and technology has become a tool for allowing us to express that creativity.
Oh, that's really terrific. Sean Green, thank you so much for being with us. Sean is the Vice President of Design and Product Marketing at Kruger International. NeoCon starts what, on Monday, I think?
On Monday, it does. It runs through Wednesday, so it's the 12th through the 14th. So bright and early, 8 a.m., doors open, and we look forward to seeing and sharing our stories and ideas with as many architects and designers as possible.
That sounds good. Where can people find you, Sean?
We're in the merchandise mart in space number 1181.
Terrific. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Elise. It's a pleasure.